Welcome to A Burning Fire. Your speaker is Jim Boyd. Our study deals with a matter that is at the very heart of being a Christian. More than once, the inspired Apostle Paul admonished brethren to examine themselves. Try your own selves whether you are in the faith. Prove your own selves, 2 Corinthians 13:5. But let a man examine himself, 1 Corinthians 11:28. Brethren, if any man be in fault, ye which are spiritual, restore such a one in the spirit of meekness, considering thyself, lest thou also be tempted. Galatians 6 and verse 1. Now all self-examination must be made with the divine standard as the measure and the authority. It seems that many of us are quite capable of examining others. But the need that we have is the attitude the apostles had when Jesus confronted them with the assertion that one of them would betray him. Now, they didn't respond, "Lord, is it James? Is it Peter? Is it John?" But one after another, they said, "Lord, is it I?" Now, that's self-examination. In no realm of self-examination are we to be profited more than examining our motives. Now, this takes a look at the heart, the mind, our spirits, the inward man. You know, when a crime is committed, the first thing police consider, seeing the evidence, is the possible motive. It makes a difference why something takes place. A man might run over somebody with his car. Well, why did it happen? Was it planned? Was it intentional? Was it reaction to anger? Was it an accident? Why, the reason behind the deed is of utmost importance. Now, our motives must be pure, as well as our deeds. The Lord often condemned the evil motives of people. He knew the hearts of men. He said, "Therefore, when thou doest thine alms, do not sound a trumpet before thee, as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in the streets, that they may have glory of men. Verily I say unto you, they have their reward. And when thou prayest, thou shalt not be as the hypocrites are, for they love to pray standing in the synagogues and the corners of the street, that they may be seen of men. Verily I say unto you, they have their reward. Moreover, when ye fast, be not as the hypocrites of a sad countenance, for they disfigure their faces, that they may appear unto men to fast. Verily I say unto you, they have their reward." Matthew 6. Now, the deeds of the hypocrites, they were not evil, but of themselves they were quite proper. But they stained the whole operation by parading themselves before others for their praises. What they were doing was motivated by the evil desire to seek the praises of men rather than the good favor of God. Now, God is certainly concerned with what we do, friend, but let us also be concerned with why we do it. It is not a matter of deed or motive. With God, it's deed and motive. And when the motive or the deed is wrong, God is displeased. Now, we can have a good motive and do wrong, as did the Apostle Paul before he became a Christian, and when he was persecuting the church. And we can do what seems to be a right deed, but have an evil motive behind it, like Ananias and Sapphira when they made their contributions. But it takes both to be pure and pleasing to God. Now, there are several biblical examples of people acting with wrong motives, even when the thing that they are doing appears to be commendable. Certainly, there are examples of men doing evil out of an evil heart, but people can ruin good things by having impure motives for doing what they do. In 1 Samuel chapter 18, we read of King Saul giving his daughter Michal to David for his wife. Did Saul wish for David to be a son-in-law? No, he did not. Did he wish to honor David by giving him the king's daughter for a wife? No, that was not it. Did he do this because of a love and affection for David, or for Michal, or for their love for each other? No, that was not the motive. At this time, you see, David was a national hero for having killed the giant Goliath. Saul was extremely jealous of the popularity of David with the people. He gave Michal to him, hoping she would become some kind of snare and problem for him. His motive for his deed was sinister. It was plotting. It was undermining. And in Matthew, the second chapter, we read of the wise men coming to Jerusalem looking for the whereabouts of the recently born Jesus. They inquired of Herod. Of course, he didn't know. But he asked the wise men to let him know where Jesus was when they found him. Now, he said he wanted to go and worship him also. But that was a lie. Herod sought to destroy him if he could find him. But I've often thought how wonderful it would be if the most powerful men of all the land wanted to worship God's Son. It would be a wonderful step in progress if the leaders of our world cared for the Christ. But Herod's motive behind his request was evil. In John, the 8th chapter, it presents us a classic example of evil motives. And the scribes and the Pharisees brought unto him a woman taken in adultery. And when they had set her in the midst, they say unto him, Master, this woman was taken in adultery in the very act. Now Moses in the law commanded us that such should be stoned. But what sayest thou? Notice, this they said, tempting him that they might have to accuse him. But Jesus stooped down with his finger wrote on the ground, as though he heard them not. So when they continued asking, he lifted up himself and said unto them, He that is without sin among you, let him first cast a stone at her. And again he stooped down and wrote on the ground. And when they heard it, being convicted by their own conscience, they went out one by one, beginning at the eldest even unto the last, and Jesus was left alone and the woman standing in the midst. Now these accusers, they had no desire for justice. They were not concerned that the law of God had been violated. They were not too supportive of the law. They did not hate the evil and love the good. Their interest was not the law, it was not the woman, or any such thing. They were tempting Jesus, trying to ensnare him in his words, seeking something whereof they might find fault and make accusation. They are like some people possibly today who listen to gospel messengers because they want to try to find fault with the message or with the messenger. And I think about in Matthew 26 of the kiss of Judas. We read about Judas when he came with the enemies of Christ to seize him in the Garden of Gethsemane. He said, Hail, Master, and kissed him. Now, you know, if the motive behind that deed had been righteous and pure and sincere, it would have been one of the most noble deeds recorded in all the annals of history. If Judas had meant by that kiss to declare, Lord, I love thee, I will never forsake thee, I will stand by thee, even in the presence of your foes, I am not ashamed to be identified as one of your apostles, why, one could not find a more outstanding, courageous, and loyal deed. But his action is noted as one of betrayal, one of the most contemptuous actions ever committed. He betrayed his Lord. Observing nothing more than the outward appearance of kissing Christ, he did not seem to be so wicked. But when one knows the motive behind his action, we turn away in disgust. Now there are motives for serving God, and God has appealed to man with various motives. There's the hope of reward. The gospel is composed of facts to believe, commands to be obeyed, promises and rewards to be enjoyed, and God keeps his promises. As Christians, we have the promise of forgiveness and guidance and providence, the resurrection, a life after death, and a home in heaven. What price can be placed on such bountiful offerings and rewards? God appeals to man, extending these rewards unto him. But God also appeals to fear. Now those who know what the Bible teaches about hell will fear hell. And the same Bible that teaches of the eternal glory of heaven also warns of the eternal punishment of hell, Matthew 25 and verse 46. It's absolutely absurd and dishonest to believe in the reality of one and dismiss the other. Appealing to fear is not evil, it's reality. People are often motivated from fear to do good, but a lot of good is accomplished because they're motivated by fear. Paul said, "Knowing therefore the terror of the Lord, we persuade men." He said, "It's a fearful thing to fall into the hands of the living God." The sacred record reveals God's wrath as well as God's love and God's kindness. There has been the expulsion of Adam and Eve from the Garden of Eden. Consider the flood in the time of Noah, or the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah. And there's the lake that burneth with fire and brimstone. Fear of the just punishment from God, that is something to motivate us to obey Him and do His will. But of course, the highest motive for serving God is because we love God. Now, all three come into play, but this is the greatest motive. Jesus said, "If ye love me, keep my commandments," and His commandments are not grievous. We love Him because He first loved us. Now, parents know what it is. Sometimes we offer rewards to our children if they will do certain things. Sometimes we even threaten punishment if they violate that which we have instructed them to do. But how wonderful it is when they have reached a degree of maturity. They are respectful, they are obedient to parents because they love their father and mother. And more than anything else, they want to please the parent. Well, the same thing is true, friend, in principle, in man serving God. And God appeals to man through fear and through reward, but mostly through love. So let us take advantage of the opportunity to examine ourselves, examine our hearts by examining our motives. We want to do the right thing, to be sure. God expects us to do the right thing. He's instructed us in His Word what is the right thing. He shows us the way that we ought to go and ought to do. But what are your motives for being a Christian? What are your motives behind your words? What are your motives regarding how you treat other people? You see, the motive has a lot to do whether it's pleasing to God and whether you're going to be faithful to the Lord. We ask the question in a song, "Is thy heart right with God?" Your heart is not right with God if your motives are evil. Solomon once said, "Keep thy heart with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life." Proverbs 4 and verse 23. Friend, we have the duty to serve God. Now, the Lord has not required anything of us that is to be burdensome. And there's not anything that the Lord has required of us that we cannot do if we be of the humble, submissive, obedient faith. Dear friend, our motive for serving God should be we love the Lord, we want to do His will, we want to magnify His name before the whole world, we want to go to heaven when we die. And if we serve God faithfully, being motivated by pure motives, then we have God's promise of heaven. This is A Burning Fire. Your speaker is Jim Boyd. Until next time.